you're saying those, I hope what you see now isn't too anticlimactic. Mr. Lester, members of the foundation, and honored guests, and among the honored guests, first and foremost, are the long-suffering wives and children of you airplane drivers. Walking around the field this afternoon, I thought possibly you antique airplane buffs might enjoy more what we did to airplanes rather than events. But on coming to the dinner this evening, there are so many of your better halves here with you, I thought possibly they would enjoy the events more. So we'll try and combine the two in the 30 minutes we have. And incidentally, Mr. Lester, will you punch me when 30 minutes are up? The first for you female types, you're always asking me why I learned to fly. So perhaps you'd like to know. I don't know. It's something you like to do, and you have an opportunity, and you do it. The first record I was fortunate enough to be able to make an incident rate. Let me mention to you ladies, particularly the men know it. For every record made and for every race run, there are always 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 other pilots who could have done it just as well. The trick is you have to either beg, buy, borrow, or steal the equipment with which to make records or run races, and then find the money to take care of all the other expenses involved in it. So don't feel that because somebody beats themselves on the chest and says, I have done so-and-so, it is because they are a better pilot than the normal run, because tank so. The first record was the altitude record, which we ran in late 1928 in a 180 hissel powered travel air. I had about 150 hours at the time, and ignorance is bliss, because there was not a doubt in my mind but what we could take this standard hissel and set an altitude record with it. The preparation for this airplane was in lightening it up as much as we could, which consisted primarily of taking the dual controls out of the front cockpit and going with minimum gas up for the hour and a half, which we figured would take for the record an hour and 15 minutes going up and 15 minutes coming down. The big problem was in finding equipment for the pilot. It was during this time that the Army Air Corps was first experimenting with supercharged engines. And Shorty Schroeder was running the tests on these back in Dayton. And they had the only oxygen equipment available in the country. And naturally, they weren't going to loan it to us. So we used our imagination and a little ingenuity and rigged our own oxygen equipment. From one of the San Francisco hospitals, we borrowed an ether mask. From a machine shop, we borrowed an oxygen bottle. The rubber hose connecting both was not so hard to find. and the rest of the equipment consisted of a pair of pliers. The pliers were to turn the gidget on the oxygen bottle. We asked several of the doctors at the San Francisco Hospital just how much oxygen did he think would be required. He finally came to the conclusion that he didn't rightly know, but he did know one thing for sure. If I got too much oxygen, I'd pass out. And if I got too little oxygen, I'd pass out. So we arbitrarily decided that when the airplane hit 10,000 feet, that I would take the pair of pliers and give this little gidget on the oxygen bottle a quarter turn. And then at every 1,000 feet thereafter, I would give it another quarter turn. And this we did. The flight went quite well. The takeoff was from Oakland Municipal Airport in the Bay Area. And of all the flights, and of all the flying I've done since, I believe that this one impressed me most from an emotional standpoint. We had two altimeters on board, the brand of that day, along with the kerosene-filled compasses. And when we got up to the peak of the climb, one read 26,000 and something, and the other 27,000 and something, and I felt like I was really up there. But at that point, as you can imagine, with an unsupercharged engine, we were almost suspended in space. It was a beautifully clear day. All over California. And hanging there with motion that wasn't discernible, with one wing of the Traveler hanging way out over the Pacific Ocean, and the other wings of the Traveler hanging way out over the Sacramento Valley, I felt, if there is an ultimate in all, it was mine. I was there where so few had been before, and I think it probably is what the first astronauts felt who looked back and saw planet Earth. If I had never flown after that, flying would have fulfilled its place in my life. The next record we made was a speed record also in a Traveler. In fact, the same Traveler we made the altitude record in. In those days, and this was very early in 1929, a lot of you fellows will remember that the NACA was a baby with very limited laboratory facilities at Langley, that while we were static and low testing aircraft with sandbags and inverted to get to the breaking point, still a great deal, in fact the majority even then, and for the next few years to follow, were made by flying the equipment. That was, the air was the laboratory. And it was on this speed flight that Walter Beach decided to send us out a set of what he called speed wings. Fittings were all the same, the center section fittings and stuff, and wing fittings. So all we had to do was take off the the standard wings with the counterbalance tail on, and hook on these speed wings, which had been shipped out from the Travel Air factory. Before we got ready to fly the record, a telegram came in from Walter Beach, who, as many of you know, was a very rough and ready type, and said exactly what he felt and exactly the words he wanted to say of it. And he said, be careful when you pull up after your speed walk run. We don't know whether the SOB and wings will stay on. Well, we did make the record, and the wings did stay on. And it may be interesting to some of you to know that it was this same wing that was put on the J5 Travel Air, which later that year I had the good fortune to fly in the first woman's air derby. And since they stayed on there and were a fast wing and a good performing wing, these wings then became standard on every Travel Air that came out of the factory thereafter. The 1929 Women's Air Derby was, I think, one of the most exciting that races I've ever flown, probably because it was a first. There never had been a race of that type flown. And we had a lady from England and one from Germany who was here, so it was really an international race. It began from Santa Monica, California, and ended in Cleveland, and was held in connection with the National Air Races. Also on this aircraft, besides the special speed wings, we were, you might say, factory testing. Walter also decided that might as well go whole hog. So on this airplane was the first full NACA cow that had been operationally flown. It was developed by NACA, and Walter got hold of the built the first one from their design and put it on my J5 Travel Air that we were to fly in this race. On the going out from Wichita to Santa Monica, I should have smelled a rat, because Walter decided that he would go as far as Fort Worth, which was going to be my first night stop going out. And he was in one of the non-cabin monoplanes, and I was taking care of, the engine was throttled back, so he of course got there before I did. And about halfway there, it was a very hot day, I started feeling a little odd. And I thought, well, it's hot and I'm probably excited and maybe just female, you know, who knows, women can't fly as well as men anyway. And then I decided I'd better stick my head out over the cockpit and get some fresh air, so I did this two or three times. And then I found that I was having to concentrate very hard to remember what the compass course was. And pretty soon it sort of seemed to be getting a little dark early, and I kept chugging along, and finally picked up the field at Fort Worth, and I didn't circle or anything, I just came right straight in, and it happened to be downwind. Taxied up to the line and bells started ringing, and I felt as though I were a feather drifting down into a very dark pit. The next thing I remember, I was stretched down on a bench in the terminal building there with water hovered all over me. And finally I got to my feet and went back into the ladies' room, and I didn't recognize who was looking at me in the mirror. There was a big white streak up here where my helmet was, two great big white things here where my goggles were, and the rest of me was coal tar black. I had gotten a very beautiful dose of carbon monoxide poisoning. It seems that somebody had forgotten that this J5 had short stacks on it. And in cowling it with this full NACA cowl, the exhaust was coming back, hugging the fuselage, and of course the cockpit with all the exhaust fumes. And I was aggravating the situation by every time I hung my head outside and was getting a fuller blast of exhaust gases than I was even getting with it in the cockpit. So Walter innovated, and that night got a long piece of flexible hose and two 10 funnels. He ran the hose from just back of the prop and then back through and into the cockpit and put a funnel on each end so that it would force good clean air back into the cockpit. So I flew all the rest of the way to California, and then from California all the way back to Cleveland in the race with my head glued in this funnel. Those were great days. The Bendix came along after that, and I guess the Bendix is the height of every pilot's ambition. But to me, having flown that first woman's air derby, the Bendix, what you hear about those things, and I think there's always a letdown anyway, because it, when you get in it, it isn't as exciting as if you're sitting on the outside wishing you were in it. This was for your benefit, Mr. Lester. You said you always wanted to hear about the Bendix. Now, I haven't dared say out loud until this moment that the Bendix, it just isn't all it's cracked up to be, because it would, before this, it would have been rank hearsay and infidelity, and I probably would have been shot. Of course, it always had been a man's race. It was the premier cross-country race in the whole wide world up to that time. And it was the aspiration of every pilot to fly the Bendix. It was the tops. It was as high as you could go. It and the Thompson Trophy and the close course races at the National Air Races. Naturally, they didn't want women in the Bendix because, as the air race officials said, and as the pilots, men pilots who flew the Bendix also said, that women not only would be a hazard to themselves in this very, very high-speed, rigorous race, but to everybody else flying the race, and it was just no place for a woman pilot. For some reason, in 1936, they decided to open the Bendix to to us lady type airplane drivers. And much to my surprise, Olivan Beach got hold of me on the phone and said, would you like to fly the Bentley? I said, well, I certainly would. And it was all a real hurry up thing. Bill Allen was supposed to fly it, and what we had was the Factory Beach Stagger Wing Demonstrator with a 420 ride in it. It was prepared for this race by taking out the back seat and putting in extra gas. And if any of you know the 420 ride, it kind of gulps oil slightly. So they put an extra oil tank in the baggage compartment, and we wobbled this up into the main oil tank, and also wobbled the gas from the rear. We had only a radio receiver. We did not have a gyro compass, and fortunately, when we got the airplane to Floyd Bennett Field on Long Island, where the takeoff was, the Ted Kenyons took their gyro compass out of their Waco and let us put it in our Beechcraft, and that was our navigational equipment. It was not particularly prepared, and Beech was kind of going from hand to mouth about that time, like a lot of other people, and it even had a very high time engine in it. We're so busy that I had gotten that feel, you know, about the Bennies all excited and everything. But I started getting let down when we had the weather briefing that night. You could take off any time after midnight. All you had to do was to be in Los Angeles before 6 o'clock Los Angeles time. You could go straight through, you could stop as many times as you wanted to, it didn't make any difference. It was your elapsed time, elapsed now, not just your air time, but your total time from your takeoff until you crossed the finish line in Los Angeles. The weather room was terrifically crowded. The smoke you could cut with a knife. Everybody was sort of knocking everybody else down trying to get weathered. There was no feeling of esprit de corps such as we had on the 29 Women's Derby. There wasn't even a feeling of competition, really. I got the feeling, well, it's just another cross country, which is really what it was. You're racing against yourself. You're racing against time. We elected to take off shortly before dawn, and Benny Howard, whom I'm sure a lot of you know, in fact, I saw one of his goddamn good airplanes out here on the line today. It took off right behind us, he and his wife Mike. Weather was not good, and we had terrific winds, so we got up on top and flew on top and throttled back. I kept remembering all the way along something that was pounded into me when in my early days of learning to fly, and which is still awfully good advice today, which you youngsters here who are coming along can remember, and that is, if you take care of your equipment, it's going to take care of you. So in the very high turbulence and with the relative fast speed of a stagger wing, I just pulled back, and we cruised at 65% power. most of the way from New York to our one and only gas stop, which was in Wichita. When you get to feeling that, you sort of pull the throttle back a bit. It was right around, it was in that area at about the same time we were coming through that Joe Jacobson lost a wing on his Lockheed Orion. So it does pay to fly a race, but fly it with calculated risk. Always calculated risk. From Wichita on out, the winds increased even more, and so did the cloud deck. We climbed up through, and then we kept going higher and higher and higher to stay out of the clouds, and flew most of the way out at between 14 and 16,000 feet. And while we had the throttle firewall, we still probably weren't pulling over about 65% power because of the altitude. We got to Los Angeles, and with the sun directly in our eyes and the usual haze out there, and the race field and old mines field were right together. We went across the finish line at Mines Field, and Blanche punched me and said, "There's the race field over here." So we bent around and crossed the line from the wrong direction and pulled up, and there was a beautiful formation of Marine aircraft who had been entertaining the people while waiting for all the Bendix racers to get in. We pulled right in among them, and you have never seen Marine scatter as fast as you alive. Well, we came back. We'd made a horrible time. We had between 90 and 110 mile an hour headwinds most of the way from Wichita out to Los Angeles. And I figured that we just definitely were tail end Charlie, and we were going to snoop down and park. We were saw some other airplanes park, and a whole crowd of people came running up, you know, shut down the engine, stop. And we thought maybe we had coming through the back door like that. We had gotten in an emergency cute. But they told us they thought we'd won the Bendix, and I wouldn't believe it until the next morning when we saw it in the papers. The odd part about that particular Bendix race was that Mr. Bendix decided that in order to entice some women into the Bendix, and because they wouldn't have a chance to win the Bendix itself, that he put up $2,000 for the first woman who finished in the Bendix, no matter what place in the Bendix itself she finished in. So we got the first place Bendix money, and we got the special award for the first woman with a place in the Bendix money. And Mr. Cliff Henderson, who was manager at the National Air Races, I don't think liked it a bit that year. Oh, so really, that was a high point. And I guess of the things we did, that having the great good fortune, and that's what it was, you know, racing is about 50% is your equipment. 25% is the ability of the guy who's flying it. And the other 25% is just pure luck. Just pure luck, however it is the ball bounces. And it just happened to bounce right for us that year, and I'm so glad it did. I'm Irish. How are we doing on time? I think, though, most interesting.